Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
As well as the Making Star Wars Podcast Network. Southern California tickets are now on sale for the Steel Wars 200th podcast live at the Scum and Villainy Cantina on Saturday the 2nd of February at 3:30 p.m. And we will be joined by special interview guest Eric Walker, who played Mace Tuani in the 80s Ewok made for TV films A Caravan of Courage, An Ewok Adventure, and Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. Get ready for behind-the-scenes stories from the films, what it was like to work with Warwick Davis, and of course, the maker, George Lucas. Plus, we'll have a special audience mic set up if you've got a question to ask too. And if you can, hang out for a bit after the show and take in all the fun of the Scum and Villainy Cantina. Pre-sale tickets are just $10 and are available from SteelWars.com or $12 on the door from the Scum and Villainy Cantina. I cannot wait to talk Ewoks with Eric, and I hope to see you there. But for now, let's get on with the show. The Scum and Villainy Fan Cantina is a Hollywood must-visit for any Star Wars fan. Its creator, J.C. Reifenberg, whose previous work includes the short film comedy Hughes the Force, the return of Return of the Jedi documentary for StarWars.com, and the pioneering Star Wars YouTube show, The Comlink. We recount the Cantina's origin story and hear how J.C. barely missing out on his dream job led to the creation of my favorite bar in the world that has become a social hub for LA's nerd community.
On May the 4th of this year, they came back and sat down with me and they were like, we met here 1 year ago today and we just signed papers to move in together. So they met here on May the 4th, started dating, and a year later moved in together and hopefully will probably get married. Every time they come here, whether they're cosplaying as young Han and Kira or old Han and Leia, or he cosplayed as Peter Pan and she was Tinkerbell before a John Williams concert a couple weeks ago, they always take the same photo in the same spot as the night they met.
Nice.
And it every time I see him, it makes me so happy because I was like, that's what this place is for, is, you know, obviously not always creating like a love connection, but like creating connections amongst people. I love that. Like, I've started saying, like, we're a comic book shop that serves alcohol instead of selling books.
Plus, JC and I talk at our different takes on The Last Jedi and rejoice in our shared love of Luke Skywalker. This is Steel Wars episode 190, The Scum and Villainy Cantina, Behind the Bar with JC Reifenberg. This episode of Steel Wars is brought to you by Harry's Shavers. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades that they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/Steel Wars. You just cover the $3 shipping and it is yours. That is harrys.com/Steel Wars. The link is in your podcast show notes. Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I'm comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. And each week we find someone of interest to talk about it with. And on today's episode, we are somewhere where we've recorded many a podcast. We are at Hollywood's Scum and Villainy Cantina with my guest, J.C. Reifenberg. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm good.
And you are the proprietor of this fine establishment.
I am, and I'm excited to be on the show because you've done your show here oftentimes, and I know you've seen me sitting in the background watching other people talk, just walking in place and pacing because I can't contribute, so now I'm pretty excited that I can actually Yeah. I can actually share my thoughts.
I think if you watch some of the video ones on YouTube, you can see JC in the background at the bar recording his own sub-podcast about the podcast topic. It is. I do that. I listen to so many Star Wars podcasts just during the day while I work. And sometimes it is... I'm so used to the interactiveness of being on them. And then when I can't chime in with like, no, like that didn't happen then. Like it is quite frustrating. What has been the toughest thing that you remember that you so wanted to like grab a mic Kanye style and jump in?
Oh, it was The Last Jedi. The whole Last Jedi podcast. The whole one. And the funny thing is like I don't, like, I like it because even when I disagree with some of the guests you've had on, they do make good points about different things. I'm like, oh, I don't think that was in the movie, but I think if I watched the movie with that in mind, I'd enjoy it more. It's been rewarding, but also sometimes somebody says something and you're just like that, like you said, like that's not how that happens. That's not how that works. You're making that up. I know for a fact that's not how it worked.
As someone that is quite a veteran podcast listener, I always have this advice when people, sometimes you'll be recording a podcast and someone will say a date or that actor was in this and they're like, oh, well, someone will let us know. We won't bother fixing. And it's like, no, stop the podcast now. Look it up and state it. Otherwise, you're going to have 50 people tweeting you.
Oh, yeah.
That it was David Prowse that was in that scene. Like, it's just, oh, you got to fix it up then and there. You got to fix it up then and there. But do you ever think about, you know, you're a lifelong Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that. You've done some great stuff for the fandom. When you're watching Star Wars and there's like, you know, there's fighter pilots and there's Jedi and there's princesses and there's smugglers. When they went into the cantina and that Woo was saying, you know, droids, we don't want them in there. Mm-hmm. Did that hit you as a child that like, that's what I'm going to grow up to be?
No, no. I'm like you. I love Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Everybody says they love Han Solo, but I think deep down everybody likes Luke Skywalker and they just pretend to like Han Solo. No, Wurr or Chalmun or none of them. None. Never in my wildest dreams.
Maybe for those that are a little bit vague about what we're talking about with the cantina, describe the Scum and Villainy cantina. Well, it's history.
It is a cantina that celebrates fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a North African architecture, so it's inspired by the cantina from the movie Star Wars, and then has a lot of elements of other fandoms that you've seen and love. So when you come in here, it feels, even if you've never been here, it feels comfortable. It feels like a place that you know very well because, you know, it. Some of the architecture looks like Star Wars, but the lighting is very Guardians of the Galaxy. And all the drinks we serve have fun names like from Firefly. And so it's, for a nerd, it is, if you've seen Ready Player One, it's like if Parzival from Ready Player One was to build a bar, I feel like this would be the bar he'd build.
It's weird. When we're sitting here, we're sitting in one of the little enclave booths sort of thing where I could shoot you under the table at any time, buddy.
That's true. Or I could shoot you first.
Wow. This is, it's not that type of bar. Now, but from this angle, I feel like I'm in that old Hasbro cardboard pop-up cantina, like with the bar and how mm-hmm. it arches out. It's a very similar look. Like because I'd only been here, you know, when it's busy, I'd not sat in a booth for ages. And then I think at the last show, someone had a booth and I sat down in it and I was like, oh my God, this is very, I don't feel like the opening credits of Entourage were just filmed out on the street here, but it is very otherworldly.
Yeah. So we, one of the things that I really wanted to do is we don't have any windows to the outside world. And we are on Hollywood Boulevard. So it's very Los Angeles, Hollywood in your face. But once you step through the door, I wanted it to be total escapism. And a lot of people say, like, how come you don't put Star Wars toys up on the wall? Or how come you don't have TVs playing nerdy movies? And it's like, well, because as soon as you... I want to remove as much earthly world as I can from inside. Now, obviously, like, our menus have to be printed in English so people can read them. And we have to, you know, have, like, some real-life stuff, like exit signs on the door. The city would go crazy if we didn't have a big exit sign over the door. But as much as we can, I try to build a spot where people can escape.
Mm. It fits the bill, because I know I normally come in to do the live podcast and it'll be daytime, and then I leave and it's quite nighttime. And it's like, oh, I didn't even realize this had happened.
It's like a Vegas casino in a way. Like, you don't quite know what's going on outside because you're just in the moment inside.
Now, I want to get into the creation of the cantina, but we will go into your fandom a little bit first. And I think a good place to start is, this morning I watched your short film, The Summer of 78.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I guess, a recreation of what a young boy may have made on a Super 8 video with Star Wars toys, with Kenner toys, cardboard play sets and stuff. And I was moved because I love all the hand-built, like, I love seeing photos of, like, setups that kids had when they were little with cardboard boxes and what their parents made for them and stuff. And I don't know, it sounds a corporate sort of way to analyze it, but the play pattern that you had in the film with, like, different lines out of the film and stuff used for different situations, that was exactly how I played. Like, I would sort of just re-edit the film in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember from playing, like, living out your own... I'm guessing it wasn't the summer of 78 when you were doing that.
No, I'm what, 37, so we're probably around the same age. I wasn't alive in summer of 78. But for the hook of the movie, I had to kind of roll back my experience. I probably did those types of things in, like, 85.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. The kind of genesis of it is I did a 35-minute short film called Hughes the Force that James Arnold Taylor acted in and Kat Tabor acted in from Clone Wars. They played Obi-Wan in Padme, and Kevin Smith was in it. It was kind of a John Hughes high school comedy mashed up with Star Wars. And it got the attention of some people at Lucasfilm who were like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then... fast forward, I did that movie to win a Star Wars fan film award, which sadly, 2011 was the last year of the fan film awards, and I didn't get the movie done in time, so I did not win. But fast forward to 2014, they brought the fan film awards back with J.J. Abrams, and one of my friends at Lucasfilm tweeted me and was like, we're bringing the fan film awards back. Like, what do you got, Reifenberg? And I was like, nothing. I was like, I said everything I had to say in Hughes the Force. Like, that was my Star Wars movie, fan film I always wanted to make.
I have to say just about Hughes the Force, and this is just amazing nerddom going on from my part, but in the movie, there is use of the Force. There's sort of like a weird science-style woman created. But the thing that I was like, come on, is that he rips open a vintage slave Leia action figure. I'm like, they never had that. This is not legit, you know. Like, sure, the guy can float the pizza with the Force, but...
Yes, I took some creative liberties in terms of that. Obviously, the action figure used in the movie is a Power of the Force 2 Leia figure from, like, 1997.
Whoever did the card mock-up, though, bang up job. That was an epic...
I think I found that on, like, the Force.net forums or something. So I'm trying to think now. I'm just going to drop his name. Matt Martin had my brain going, like, well, if I were to do another Star Wars short, what would I do? And it was, you know, the sequel trilogy's coming up. It's J.J. Abrams. Everybody's so excited. But there was a lot of nostalgia behind it also because it was Han, Luke, and Leia coming back. Or so we thought we'd see them all again on the same screen, which we didn't. But so I was like, gosh.
We saw them at the same Comic-Con panel.
Yeah. I was like, gosh, I just loved cracking open my action figures and using whatever play sets or boxes or whatever I had, because I didn't have tons of money, so I didn't have every action figure and every play set. I had to use, the Luke X-Wing pilot as Luke Return of the Jedi, and I had to use, you know, the generic Hoth trooper as, like, Han Solo in Hoth costume, and so I was like, oh, like, that's what I haven't done. Like, I haven't tapped into the nostalgia of Star Wars. Like, what Star Wars really means, like, where that love comes from. And I think for people my age, so much of what they love about Star Wars came from those Kenner figures and recreating the movie in their own way from those. And that's what, you know, really got their imaginations going. And also where you got the names of Hammerhead and Walrus Man and all of those great characters. Kenner made those up and put them on a action figure. And then to kind of, you know, make it relevant and forward thinking, you know, we kind of dropped the J.J. Abrams in at the end, and it was actually, spoiler alert, that the little boy in the movie is supposed to be J.J. Abrams, and it was almost like, when I did it, it was that April, and it was a letter to Star Wars fans saying, like, we're in good hands. This guy grew up the same way we did.
Mm-hmm. I love remembering and hearing about people's, like, things that they had to do, like, to get by with what they had. I never had a Jabba the Hutt, and that's my favorite scene. So my Bib Fortuna was always called Jabba the Hutt, and he was, like, the stand-in. It was, like, in the office and David Brent's away or whatever, and you've got Dwight or whatever. But yeah, I had Bib Fortuna, who incidentally is one of my least favorite characters in Star Wars. He's a Jedi cockblocker. No buys.
Which you always picked your least favorite character. I used Crix Madine as Luke Skywalker constantly. Because, like, what good is General Madine? Like, he's not interesting or fun, but man, did he fly an X-Wing when I called him Luke Skywalker.
His head could actually make a decent vintage custom old Luke Skywalker now.
That's true.
Because a lot of those sculpts, like if you look at the Luke Stormtrooper, The Power of the Force, that head sculpt is
so bad. And then the helmet is huge to get over it.
But it was so thrilling that it was produced. I remember I just saw photos of it and was just like, oh my God, he can get into the... Because it used to be like you just have a stormtrooper and pretend he was in there. Took a lot of work. So you're a Luke Skywalker guy. What was it about Luke that hooked you in?
I wasn't cool growing up. And what was interesting is I don't think I ever really wanted to be cool, or like my idea of what was cool wasn't what society's idea of cool is. Like, I still think Poison and Def Leppard are cool. So obviously, like, I'm just not there. And I think, you know, Luke being the hero and not being the cool guy, but being the guy who saves the day. And I think that just captured me. And I, like you, I love the green lightsaber. And I think the best scene in any Star Wars movie, hands down, is the Luke versus Vader fight scene. And that's one of my first memories of ever, was my dad took me to the movie theater. And I don't really remember the movie Return of the Jedi. It was probably towards the tail end of its run in 83 or beginning of 84. But I remember the chaos that was the movie theater and how excited people were. And I remember the red and the green lightsabers crossing in that shot that's like they're silhouetted behind the staircase. And like that image was always burned into my head. And like, I mean, Luke is the greatest hero of since Odysseus. I mean, it's just, it is what it is, you know?
And thus, when they decide what to do with him, some of us...
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not what I wanted to see by any stretch of the imagination. But the major problem I had with it was I just didn't think that they justified what they did with him. Had they justified what they did with him in the movie, I probably... Or had I felt they justified what the direction they took him, I probably would have been okay with it. I would have said, that's not what I would have done, but I'm okay with it. Mm. My problem with it was I didn't feel like it sold me. Like, they had to do more to sell me that Luke would just take his father's lightsaber and toss it over his shoulder and let Rey beat up on him. I just didn't, you know.
It's interesting. Someone tweeted out yesterday that I retweeted that in their, like, corner of fandom, they were talking about, like, they sort of worked out The Last Jedi before it came out. Like, with the Force attachment between Kylo and Rey and Luke being old grumpy Luke and stuff like that, which, you know, people would theorize about old grumpy Luke. But quite often I see people that really don't like The Last Jedi, and they say it's, how could he do, like, go that way? And it's like, well, with all the movies, there's like four different ways you could logically do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, The Empire Strikes Back, you know, what, you could change anything in it that, you know, Luke doesn't go to Dagobah or something like that. And it's like, oh, that could be logical. But it is that weird thing of, like, now it's, the story's taken out of the hands of the guy that invented it. I feel like we're now more apt to judge the decision sort of thing, because it's like, it's someone else but not us. And like, and I think it's fine to do that in, I don't know, like, a lot of time fandom sort of shows you bad sides to yourself. Like, and sometimes when I see like a creative decision, I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
These fools don't know. Like...
Yeah, I mean, I look, and to be fair to Star Wars and Last Jedi, the problems I have with Last Jedi, I have with a lot of movies I watch. Mm. That I just don't feel that the cause and effect and the setup and the payoffs are as strong as they should be. And I think part of it also is, you know, as a society, everything we do now is so temporary and disposable. When your TV breaks, you go buy a new TV. But in 1985, when your TV broke, you took it to the local TV repairman. You know, everything we just throw out and buy new. And I think that movies and, you know, Last Jedi being a new movie, I feel like a lot of them are treated as disposable. In the way that, well, Last Jedi came out in December, and we've got Star Wars Rebels and Han Solo coming out in the next 6 months. So, like, nobody's going to be talking about Last Jedi, ha, 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 so they thought, by the time Solo came out, you know? So, you know, I mean, it's okay, though. Like, I liked Solo, you know? Yeah, I just think it's... I think it's storytelling in general has... There's a lot of stuff that isn't going as deep in motion pictures, and you're seeing a lot of character development in television now.
Yeah, which is what makes it so interesting with that Favreau like series. Mm-hmm. Like, what could he do over that stretch of time? Like, I'm watching like that show The Deuce, which is about... early 80s Times Square and like how that sort of adult trade started and stuff. It's on HBO, and it's like, I think there's maybe like 10 episodes a season, and they're just gripping. Like, I'm so engaged with the characters and worried about them and stuff. And I'm Yeah, I'm so excited to have that opportunity to do that in Star Wars.
Yeah,
Galaxy.
And just I hope they go weird places with it. Like, I hope we see like some young Twi'lek girl whose family's trying to get her to be a dancer, but she wants to be a pilot. You know, or I hope we get those weird kind of stories that make that galaxy a bigger place that we understand better. Instead of, again, like, and that's something that people complain about so much about Star Wars is the patriarchy of it, where it's like, well, I like that Rey's not a Skywalker because it means that, you know, anybody can be a hero. I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. I still miss my Luke Skywalker, but like, I feel like the TV show would be an awesome place to explore a million little stories. Kind of like, I hope they do it like X-Files. You know how X-Files had like the main story where it was like Mulder's sister was kidnapped by aliens and he's out to prove it. But then you have like the great, like kind of like Monster of the Week episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they do that. Like, I hope we've got, like, a central through line, but, like, you get to explore these little weirdness of the galaxy. Anyway. Yeah. Now we're making a movie. Or now we're making the TV show.
So once you're out on iTunes, you get a lot of creative control over most media properties. What about, so if Luke Skywalker's your main guy, who's your fave background character?
I really like Salacious Crumb. I really like, oh man, that's a tough question. If I go through Star Wars bit by bit, the one that Salacious Crumb sticks out, I think action figure wise, I had Yoda. So like Yoda, I guess he's not really a background character though. My favorite Cantina alien is Danik Jericho, I think. I think he's so weird.
Which one's that?
He's the one who smokes the pipe.
Oh, and he's just like
he's a humanoid,
yeah,
but
dude with like big eyebrows or something.
Yeah,
like.
He's got like, I don't know, like a weird, kind of a messed up face. But yeah, he smokes the pipe, which he calls his soup.
He's back on the soup.
Yeah. It's like, it was like Death Sticks before Death Sticks. Or I guess after Death Sticks, if you're speaking chronologically.
It's a very confusing franchise. Don't worry about it. And what about your favorite scene?
I mean, everybody's favorite scene is the one where he like comes up from the garage and he kicks the rock and he stares out at the suns, you know. But really, my favorite scene is the whole Vader Luke at the end of Return of the Jedi. As a kid, I think I just loved the music and the lightsabers and like the fact that Luke beat Darth Vader at the end. But I think as a filmmaker now, I feel like that scene is the heart of what Star Wars is about. You know, it shows you get to see Luke walk in, face his fears overtake him. He gives in to his fear and ultimately stands up for what is right. And Luke does that in that scene, and you also get to watch Darth Vader do that in that scene. I think it's like one of the best scenes ever in anything.
When I was young, I always found it really confusing. Like, I couldn't just strike him down. Like, when the Emperor's like going, just hit me. I'm just like, yeah, just hit him.
Yeah, just hit him.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a... Like, because I so trusted Luke Skywalker, do you know what I mean? That he was going to do the right thing. So I was like,
why aren't you doing it?
Yeah, just cut his head off. That'd be sick.
Now that you're saying that, I think I felt the same way. Like, I didn't understand why he wouldn't just kill the bad guy. But you, like you said, you trusted Luke Skywalker so much that you bought the scene.
Yeah.
You were like, well, if Luke's doing this, he's doing it for a reason.
But, and that's the thing, I was left with the thing of like, why? I've got to work this out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because, you know, when you're little, it's, the answer's like a pretty, like if you're getting bullied, push. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you just go for simple answers. And this was like, to win, he's not trying to win. Like, he's winning the fight by not fighting. Mm-hmm. How does that work? That's very complicated for a five-year-old boy that's out with his action figures in the garden trying to work out.
But that's what's so awesome about Star Wars also. And I've talked about this a lot. I don't think ever on a podcast, though, is the brilliance of Star Wars is that a lot of people's experience with Star Wars starts when they leave the movie theater. Where, like, a Marvel movie you watch, and your experience starts when the movie starts and ends when the movie ends. But with Star Wars, you would watch the movie and you'd be like, that's so cool. And you left, and it made you want to do something. So, you know, you do a Star Wars podcast. I'm sure you're not making millions of dollars off your Star Wars podcast, but you do it every week. You do it because you love it, and it's a creative outlet that was inspired by this movie. And there's, you know, a million filmmakers and visual effects artists and robotics people and people who work at NASA and people who open bars that were inspired by Star Wars to get out and chase their dreams, which is something that movie also has done so well that I think we aren't getting with the new movies. And to be fair to the new movies, I don't know if the prequels ever did that either. That original trilogy made people want to do things. Like, do or do not, there is no try, is like what that movie did to audiences.
What about when you're younger? Now, this is like commonplace in modern times, but like in the 80s, I felt like I was shocked when anyone would have anything critical to say about Star Wars. Like, it was like, really? There's a bit you don't want? Like, there's maybe bits that I'd maybe drift off, like when they're, you know, R2-D2 and C-3PO are going through the desert. Not the most exciting thing, you know. It's sort of like, come on, just get to Luke Skywalker. Let's get on with it. But back then it seemed, and because I was so young, it was like sacrilege to even criticize. And then in the 90s, it was kind of in vogue to like call shit out, sort of like, mm-hmm. Well, if he's called Luke Skywalker, like, why is he hiding? Like, you know, the name of Luke Skywalker, yeah. All that sort of stuff. It was, I don't know, I kind of like the time when you just, like, obviously we analyze it so much now and on the podcast and that, but that thing where you just accepted it and just went, this is Star Wars.
This is the great, there is nothing wrong with it. It reminds me of Kyle's movie Fanboys, mm-hmm. where it's just like, you know, he's the greatest actor that ever lived about Harrison Ford. And that's kind of how, basically, I mean, I still kind of feel about Star Wars. But, yeah, in the 80s, you didn't, I mean, I think it's because it wasn't as popular, right? Because you were probably really into Star Wars when nobody was really into Star Wars. Where, like, if you saw somebody with a Star Wars toy in 1987 or a Star Wars t-shirt, like, you were immediately, like, the best man at their future wedding, you know? Like, it was such a cool thing that you didn't, and it was so sparse that you didn't want to say anything bad about it because you were never going to get it again.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because I was super into skateboarding as well. And in the early 90s, they were both times when if you saw someone with a skateboard t-shirt or a Star Wars t-shirt, you'd go up to them and go, mm-hmm. hey, what's up? I'm into this stuff. Whereas now, you know, like either both skateboard brands and Star Wars, mm-hmm. it's like you see people wearing them just like...
Yeah, everybody wears Vans. Everybody knows who Tony Hawk is now.
Oh, my God. In Australia, there was, in my town, a BMX rider, this girl that was like a, you know, like an amateur BMX rider. And she had a pair of Vans. And if I would see her down the street, it was like her feet were like celebrities. They're mm-hmm. like, oh my God, someone owns Vans in my town. That's how cool this town's getting. Someone owns Vans. Very hard to get in the 80s, you guys. Great, great pair of shoes. Great pair of shoes.
Let me ask you guys this. Are you or anyone in your close proximity one of those humans with facial hair that often likes to remove them? Are you or that person someone that enjoys high quality products? Also, are you or that person into high quality products, facial hair removal, and love a sweet deal? If you said yes to any or all of these bizarre questions, admittedly, then you should check out our special deal from Harry's Shavers. Harry's Shavers was started by Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were bit by a radioactive shaver. No, sorry, they were fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades. So they pretty much just bought a factory and started their own program, going direct to the consumer to cut out that dreaded middleman. This is me going direct to you, middleman, out in the cold, mate. Out in the cold, and you're saving some sweet bones, which may or may not be slang for money. To the point, I use Harry Shavers, and as my six-week-old baby Harrison demands, I need to be clean-shaven. This stubble business, it is met with tears and loud noises, which are two things I am desperately trying to avoid. So, to avoid your own tears and loud noises, go to harrys.com/steelwars. You know that link is in the show notes. And sign up for your free trial offer. You're getting $13 of value for free when you sign up. You just cover the shipping, which is a mere $3. To get a weighted ergonomic razor handle with 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Not only is this set great to test it out, it makes for a great travel kit when you're hitting cons or the like. So thanks so much, Harry Shavers, for supporting the podcast, and you can support them, which also supports the podcast, which also supports clean shaving at harrys.com/steelwars. Click it right now. That's harrys.com/steelwars. My voice went up at the end because that's how passionate I am about well-priced shaving products. Harrys.com/yours. Go on. Talking about Return of the Jedi, you did that little mini documentary. Was it for Star Wars? It's on the Star Wars YouTube account.
It was for
account.
Entertainment Weekly and Star Wars, yeah.
And you did that with Kyle Newman, and it was the Return of the Jedi mm-hmm. with like a bunch of sort of geek cred celebrities spouting off their favorite things about Return of the Jedi. Now, if you're here at the Scum and Villainy listening to me podcast and you want to jump in with stuff, how are you listening to all these people say their favorite things of Return of the Jedi? Were you just there like with a fist up? Yes!
I was cheering. And like, there's some people, the two people who really stuck out to me were Sam Witwer, which we could have put, I think Sam talked for 90 minutes, and we literally could have just put Sam's entire 90-minute talk about Return of the Jedi in, because it was just amazing. And then the other was, from Fallout Boy, the lead singer of Fallout Boy.
Pete Wentz.
No, Pete, the other guy, Patrick Stump, who's not in it very much, but he had such, like, incredible love for the movie that was genuine, you know? Like, some people joked about, like, oh, you know, in the hood, we didn't call it a slave costume, or, you know, Kevin Smith joked around about it, but, like, the reverence that he just had for, like, the nuance of Return of the Jedi was so, I was just like, I want to hug you. I want to hug you, but it'll ruin this thing, but I just, gosh, I love it. Because everybody always says, like, well, Empire's the best, and then A New Hope is okay, and, like, Return of the Jedi sucks. And I want to punch those people in the face. Because I'm like, no, like, maybe, yeah, there's another Death Star, and yeah, they're on Tatooine again, and yeah, I mean, it mirrors the first one a lot. But, like, you got TIE interceptors and a green lightsaber, the emotion of that movie is so awesome. And you learn that Darth Vader is actually Luke's dad. He's not lying. And that Leia's his sister. And that frees Han up to to get with... Oh, such a good movie.
There's a lot of bombshells. It's a big finale of the season.
And Luke got to yell at Obi-Wan. He's like, you told me he betrayed and murdered my father, old man. I don't love you the way I once did.
The weird thing about the green lightsaber is I don't even like the color green.
Yeah, neither do I.
But I just... It's what that represents.
Do you know what they... Do you know why I heard why they did that? And this could be speculation.
It's because of the blue sky.
The blue sky.
And the saber wouldn't have shown up as well. It's... That's the, like... The thing about Star Wars that I feel like gets milked a little bit now out of fun. And that's like everything has an explanation. And it's all... We've got to write backstories and books. And here's this, that, and the other. It was like... He's got a green lightsaber, which now is so iconic because the blue wouldn't have shown up on the blue.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Like, it's like a rad... Like a lot of times... And I think, like, George Lucas begrudges these things that held him up that we love. Do you know what I mean? That he wants to go back and fix stuff. And it's like, nah. Like, it was ghetto, but it was our ghetto.
Yeah,
we loved it. We like seeing the strings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was our thing. Oh, have you ever been out to the Sarlacc pit?
I have not. I've had friends that have gone out there and brought me back sand from it, and like pieces of the foam that are still out there, and the wood from the sail bark. So I have some of that stuff, but I've never been out there.
Oh, you've got to. It gets you. Like, I was sort of driving, and then I realized we were surrounded by the dunes. So if you look out and in your eyes block out the road, it's like you're doing the shot, the establishing shot of, like, the sail barge going over. Like, it's like all of a sudden you are on Tatooine. It is
I have to
amazing.
Do that.
And I, before we found a large amount of that rubber stuff from the Sarlacc pit, my wife was very... patronizingly going, yeah, that's from Star Wars. Yeah, that's great. Put it in your little bag. There's a collectible for you. And then she ended up turning around. But you have to, like, it is an amazing place to visit.
My,
Yuma, Arizona, everyone.
My dream for my 40th birthday is I want to go on a trip and hit all the locations from the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. And so, like, go to Norway, go to Northern California, go to Yuma, Arizona, and do all of that stuff.
Okay, that's good, right? That's a fine idea. But I think, just to add a bit of nerdism to it, you have to do it in chronological order.
Oh.
So you have to go from, like...
Tunisia. To Norway.
Yeah.
And back to Tunisia later.
You might have to go to Guatemala or something.
Oh, yeah.
For Yavin 4. And so this is going to be a big birthday for you.
I know. I got to start saving now. But I feel like I need to do that. I donated to that Lars Homestead Fund.
Yeah, right.
Several years ago. And so I really want to get out there and look at the igloo. It kills me that the political climate over there is so bad right now, because I'm like, if I don't get over there to do that, like, I don't think I can consider my life complete. Like, I have to go do it.
I'm pretty torn up about it. Like, because it's, for those that don't know, it's quite dangerous to go there now with, you know, terrorist activity in that sort of region, which is, I want to stand at that. On that hill and have that music play. And it's, yeah. That
I mean, how would you not cry? Like, how I, imagining myself there, I could well up. Like, if I ever had to do a scene with Meryl Streep in a movie, I'd be like, I'm in Tunisia, the music, the sun's coming down. And I'd be like, and I never even learned to read. And she'd be like, wow, you're really good. I'm like, Star Wars.
I think I'd go Chewie, we're home. That can just... I can just think about that line and it can just unlock. Like, I can start crying now if you want. That'd be great when your employees start to
show up.
Why do you make Steel cry? Very mean. So, I love that Return of the... That Return of the Jedi documentary was really fun. So The other thing, before we get to the cantina, you used to do a show called The Comlink. You were like the producer of that, or that was like a like sort of an interesting sort of experiment, sort of one of the first YouTube things of Star Wars I watched. I was a very late comer to watching people do Star Wars news on YouTube because it's so National Inquiry sort of thing for the most part. But talk about Comlink.
Comlink was interesting. I don't know if I've ever publicly talked about this. I was in the running to get hired by Lucasfilm right before the Disney sale. And then the Disney sale happened and I didn't, and they like just put the kibosh on it. And then when they relaunched StarWars.com and did all of that, I was the runner up to the guy who was going to be hired to create videos and do the editing and work with Mickey and Matt and Andy and that whole team up there. I was the runner up. I was working on Kevin Smith's Tusk movie and I was supposed to be acting that movie in a scene and I had to cancel on Kevin Smith because I was sitting in his car doing a phone interview with Lucasfilm. And then I got flown up to LDAC to like interview with everybody, and it was amazing, and I was so excited, it's like heartbreaking. I'll never forget.
Could be your crying thought when you're with Meryl.
It will be.
I'm about to tear up.
I recognized the department was actually Disney Interactive, and I recognized the Disney phone number every time it called me. And because I'd always, it's 818, whatever. I recognized it. It was 9:30 at night, and I was driving over the 101 freeway right by Universal Studios. And it was 9:30 at night on a Friday in December. And I saw the Disney number come up, and I'm like, this is either going to be really good news or really bad news, because who's working at a corporate job at this time? And they were like, hey, JC, like, everybody really likes you up at Lucasfilm. Would you be willing to relocate? And I said, yeah. And they said, what sort of salary requirements would it be? And I gave them a number, and they said, well, we can hit that number. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They're like, yeah, we'll call you Monday to like work out the details. And Monday came and went, and Tuesday came and went. And on Wednesday, I emailed them, and I didn't hear back. And on Thursday came and went. On Friday, I called and left a message. And the following week was the week of Christmas. And I'll never forget, Christmas was on a Thursday. And on that Monday, I put out a tweet and I just said, all I want for Christmas is to know if I'm moving to San Francisco next year. And on that Wednesday, December 24th, I got an email from Disney Interactive that was this is after I started talking to them in October. And it's now almost the end of December. It was a form email saying that they went with somebody else. And I was like, I know this is a long story to get to the Comlink, but I was devastated because like every other fan, the only thing I ever wanted to do was to say hi to the Yoda statue every day on my way to work. And
oh man, because we had Justin Bolger on the other week and we talked about his interview process, and I was like, oh, you know, must have been, you know, super nervous, you know, to go for an interview with his job, and it all worked out, so it's all good. But
yeah,
dude,
and so
at least they timed it well.
yeah. Tomorrow maybe he'll get some Star Wars toys that'll make him feel better. So it was okay. Everything ended up, but I really
did. Send you any Star Wars toys?
No, they sent me nothing. I didn't get anything. All I got was that email, and I got to talk to some of the people I had interviewed with later, who kind of explained what had happened. And it was all okay.
Because in Rosebud, right, when McDonald's opened up and every kid in town went for a job at McDonald's and you knew you didn't get the job if they gave you a cheeseburger voucher.
Oh.
So it was like, we're not going to let you out the back, but please come to the counter and see the other people that got a job.
Oh, I wish. If I had gotten a box of toys, it would have softened the blow. But at that time, I had been working with David Collins also on a Star Wars documentary. And we kind of... That kind of got paused also for many of the... a similarly heartbreaking story on that documentary. But we... So we were like, what if we did a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Almost like ESPN style news show, like SportsCenter or ESPN News when they used to have the news ticker. What if we did a weekly show like that, but for Star Wars? Because... in my mind, Star Wars and nerddom is the same thing as sports, you know, but sports is everywhere. You have an ESPN channel, but back then you didn't have anything. So that's what we set out to do. We set out to make ESPN for Star Wars fans. And, you know, David's hosted Star Wars Celebration forever, and he's worked up there, and I thought he'd be a great host, and that's what we put together. And it was just a creative outlet for both of us who I had just lost my dream job at Lucasfilm, and he had just a couple years prior left his dream job at LucasArts when they closed down. And it was just a way for us to get back into the community and do something instead of just buying and consuming stuff, create and put something back, give something back to a community that had given us so much throughout our whole lives. So we did, you know, the show started with like the week's news, and then we did, and this show predates the Star Wars show by 2 months. So like we had...
Was it only 2 months?
Yeah, we had our first 8 episodes out, I believe, before, or 6 episodes out before Star Wars show did. And we got like fun guests, like Grant Imahara did a great interview where he talked about when he was at ILM, he was the guy who would dress up as C-3PO and do public events. And we had the head guy of the 501st on at the time, Matt Lanter, Kat Tabor, James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah, there was tons of Clone Wars people.
Yeah, we had a lot of the Clone Wars guys. We had I don't know, it's just really fun. I wish that I could have kept it going, but it was so much work. It was like a full-time job.
Yeah, how did you find, like, just trying to break into, like, YouTube at the time?
Oh, it's tough. It's really tough because, I mean, I went to film school, and I feel like YouTube, I'm like the old man on YouTube. Like, I don't really understand the way it works and collaborations and algorithms and all that stuff. I'm the guy who's like, you make something, a studio buys it, and then they put it up on TV for you.
Mm.
And so YouTube, I struggled with that a lot. I felt like we created really good content, but never really found the audience that we hoped to find.
Yeah, because for like the professionalism in the show, like it was made, essentially you made the Star Wars show, mm-hmm. like, do you know what I mean? Like that... it could have been, and like if someone said, let's start a weekly show about Star Wars out of Lucasfilm, it could have been that show,
yeah.
Or it could have been the show they end up making. So it was like very, you know, for YouTube, real high production values. It wasn't just, you know, a dude at his table in his mm-hmm. bedroom sort of thing. But I always found, like when I watched it, that its problem was... it wasn't official, so it didn't have that bandwidth of it's mm-hmm. on that channel, and it wasn't salacious. Like, it was just sort of telling the news in an informative, fun way, and it's like without having like the mega channel or you're doing something crazy or outrageous or like saying like I don't know, but is there anything that drives traffic more on YouTube than saying something sucks? Like, it seems like it's a, like, podcasting sort of seems more like the output's more positive and a bit more thoughtful, maybe. Maybe I'm sort of just, like, patting my friends on the back with that. But YouTube seems a lot more like, ah, what have you done for me in the last 3 minutes? Like,
yeah, I think that's it. And I think what's interesting is I think we hit this weird thing where, like, yeah, we're not official, but we looked official, and I think it made us kind of inaccessible to people. You know, there's something about, like, videotaping you and I just sitting here with a microphone, like, anybody could go and do, that people are like, oh, they're like me, only, like, Steele gets to go to the premiere. Like, I want to be like Steele, and he's not a celebrity. He's, like, halfway between me and the celebrity, like, that people, like, trust you. But I think we were a little bit too high-end and polished, so people were like, well, this looks official, but it's not official, so I don't have to listen to it. And we, like, kind of fell in that this weird void where, like, we didn't quite have an audience of people who, like we weren't relatable enough, but we weren't official enough. And we, like, fell in this weird little chasm in between that. Where I feel like if we were a little bit sloppier, people would have been like, well, I could do this at home, so I'll watch these people. Yeah. Like, it wasn't casual enough.
Yeah, because coming from that, you know, more production side, you're just like, let's just make it as good as possible. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, let's make it slick. I'm going to do some 3D graphics on this. Like, I shouldn't have done that. You know, we should have just taped it in my living room, but...
It's weird to learn, like, when I'm trying to learn to do stuff on video and on YouTube and stuff, like... how much effort is required for these production? Like, do you know what I mean? How much is the background? How much are people taking notice of that? Or is it just what you're saying? It's a weird...
Yeah, I mean, you may want to cut this out because it's not about Star Wars. But I got hired to go and do... by John Frieda to go and do a video for a YouTube makeup artist. And they paid me a bunch of money to go and do this very pro... video for this makeup artist who's making millions of dollars doing YouTube videos every year, and she's shooting with like a cell phone and like two lights that she bought at Sammy's Camera for $40, and I show up with like my $25,000 video camera to do behind the scenes of her makeup tutorial video. So I'm like, that's when I was really like, wow, I fell in the perfectly wrong time. Like, I'm too old for YouTube, but I'm too young to be like the film school generation of like Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino. I'm like, I'm just hosed. Like, what a waste I spent that money on that education.
I'm going to open a bar.
Yeah. So I'm going to go do something else.
Independent podcasts survive by listener support, and the easiest and most direct way for you guys, the listener, to support the Steel Wars podcast is at the Steel Wars Patreon, which is patreon.com/Steel Wars. For just $3 a month, you get to support the ongoing production of the podcast and also enjoy a plethora of bonus content, and the content is on fire this month. Just uploaded is, in full video and full audio, the Star Wars Year by Podcast episode 2, covering 1970 to 1972 with my good buddy Hawes Burkhart from the Blue Harvest Podcast and I, running through all the Star Wars political and pop cultural happenings in those years as they relate to Star Wars. That one just got uploaded, as well as our episode 1 after show with listener voicemails and further discussion with me and Hawes about the 1914 to 1970 episode. So if you enjoy the podcast, got a couple of bucks to spare every month and want some premium bonus content every week, check out patreon.com/Steel Wars.
Talk about the bar opening.
So this was an idea. In LA, they have the Saved by the Max bar. But that actually is a Saved by the Bell pop-up. But that actually opened in Chicago. And my fiance is a huge Saved by the Bell fan. Like, JC is to Star Wars as Jen is to Saved by the Bell. And I grew up in Chicago, so I bought tickets to Chicago to go to the opening. Well, like, we couldn't get in. It was, like, completely sold out. We managed to get in the next day. But while I was there, I was just like, you know, like, there's something to, like, fandom and pop culture and in a world where ESPN is not doing well and the NFL and MLB and ratings are down across sports, why is there not, but there's a million sports bars.
Gotcha.
Why is there not a spot for people like me to hang out and meet people like me? And so she and I started talking, and she's a bar and restaurant designer. And for the first time ever, that like dream of creating a space for nerds was able to happen, because I'm like, oh my God, I love you. And this is what you do for a living. Like, I have access. We could do this. And so we put together a business plan, and we pitched it to a restaurant group that she's done a lot of bars and restaurants for, and they went for it. And we did it as a pop-up restaurant, because we were like, nobody's really done this before. I don't know if people will like it. Mm. But like, if we can do it for 2 months, like, dream achieved. And we were able to do it for 2 months, and then another month, and then another month. And then that August, I went to the business partners, because they were supposed to run operations. They run bars and restaurants for a living. I do nerd stuff and film. And they're like, oh, we don't have a plan for August. And I was like, well, I didn't sell any more tickets. So are we shutting down? And they're like, yeah, I think we're going to shut down. And I spent so much time here when it was a pop-up, and my fiance spent so much time, and we talked to so many people that were like, this is great and all, but like, it'd be so much nicer if I didn't have to make a reservation and set it on my calendar. Like, if I could just, I had a bad day at work and I just could go someplace where everybody here would be willing to help me escape. And so that August, I did something crazy, having never worked a day at a bar or restaurant in my whole life. I said, you know what, guys, I'm going to take it over. You guys go, you guys fade into the background. I'm going to take this space over and I'm going to do it. And they're like, you can't just do it. Like, you can't just do it. I was like, well, if it fails in September, it'll fail in September. But like, I want to give it a shot. And that was a year ago or 13 months ago. And here we are, like, you know.
So with, you used to have to like book in. Was mm-hmm. was that just to like limit the amount of people that were here, like to not have overcrowding?
It was a way to mitigate the risk of opening the bar. So, you know, it cost a ton of money. And so by it was almost like a Kickstarter without being a Kickstarter.
So they're sort of, they're pre-booking their yeah. consumption of goods and services.
Correct. Yeah. And so when you, it was $50 to get in, which is kind of expensive, but we gave you a pint glass with a logo on it. We gave you a challenge, a commemorative challenge coin, and two drinks. And you got to hang out here for 2 hours. And we kind of had a pre-programmed light show and soundtrack and things like that. And so, you know, for Hollywood Boulevard, that's actually a pretty good value. You know, if you went to Hard Rock Cafe today, you would not get two drinks, a souvenir pint glass, and a pin for $50. So that's kind of how we started. And then when we kind of went to not having to book a time and things like that, I wanted to reward the people who helped get us to where we were at. So those challenge coins that those people got are good for 10% off your bill in perpetuity. So as long as we are open, if you came here while it was a pop-up, you bought one of those challenge coins, or you got one of those challenge coins with your ticket,
it saves 10%. So if you come here every week and you spend $20, you know, after you know, 30 weeks, you've made your money back on that ticket purchase.
The cool thing about it, you know, people saying they just want somewhere to go. Like I, whenever now someone's in town and they're slightly nerdish, it's just my go, like, I'll meet you there. You can get there early. I'll get there. Like, there's always going to be someone here to talk to. And it's evolved into like a cheers like environment that for like all the bar staff, like are always like dressed up and they're into it and they want to like talk about whatever's happening, like on, you know, for me, like in Star Wars or whatever. But it's, yeah, I just like that, especially because I'm from the other side of the planet, that I can come down here almost any time and there'll be someone else here that I...
That like, you can talk to. Yeah. And it's easy. It's an easy conversation to... The icebreaker is simply the fact that we exist. Mm. You know, and the fact that you walked into this bar, you have something in common with somebody else that's in this bar. One of the things I love is there's a guy named Brian, and Brian is actually the guy who did the episode 7 poster, and he came here on May the 4th of 2018. He came here on May the 4th of 2017, and he met a girl here, and they took a couple pictures because they were both dressed up. Well, they started became Facebook friends and started talking. On May the 4th of this year, they came back and sat down with me, and they were like, we met here 1 year ago today, and we just signed papers to move in together. So they met here on May the 4th, started dating, and a year later moved in together, and hopefully will probably get married. Because, and they, every time they come here, whether they're cosplaying as young Han and Kira or old Han and Leia, or he cosplayed as Peter Pan and she was Tinkerbell before a John Williams concert a couple weeks ago, they always take the same photo in the same spot as the night they met.
Nice.
And it every time I see him, it makes me so happy, because I was like, that's what this place is for, is... You know, obviously not always creating like a love connection, but like creating connections amongst people. And we don't have TVs here, and we don't have a lot of distractions, because I want people's eyes at eye level. Make eye contact with somebody. Tell them that you like the fact that they're wearing a shirt that says Blue Milk, you know, that looks like Coca-Cola, or you know, that what do they think about the new Captain Marvel trailer? Like, I love that. Like, I've started saying, like, we're a comic book shop that serves alcohol instead of selling books.
You can't download beer. You can't download beer. One thing I love is when I'm here is seeing people that have obviously never been in before, and they walk through the door off Hollywood Boulevard, which is, it is another world, into another world, and their face is just like mouths agape. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good look.
I love that. There's three types of people who walk in. There's the type of people who've never been here before. They walk in and their jaw just drops. Those are the people I love. Then there's the people who walk in, they get about a foot past the door, and it's like there's a force field there, and they look around wide-eyed like, what the hell is this? And then they turn and they walk out. And then there's the type of people that are somewhere in the middle, where they walk in, their jaw hits the floor, they turn around, they take a selfie, and then they walk out. I was like, you could have at least bought a drink. I feel like I'm one of those guys down in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater, where it's like, no selfies unless you buy a Blue Milk. Not true, but kind of.
I just drove past there on the way here, and I was just thinking, like, for those dudes that, you know, dress up in the costumes, it's like, what's the first day on the job like? That, just trying to get that first photo, like, oh, brutal, brutal.
I can't even imagine.
And I've been here quite often, and you've had some, you know, some pretty highfalutin nerd celebrity guests. Name drop a few people that have come in for some Blue Milk.
Dan Fogler,
Kyle Newman, Jamie King, Zach Levi, Danny McBride, Lisa Loeb, Jet Lucas, Ray Park.
I've seen Jet here numerous times.
Sam Witwer. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jet's here a lot. Who else has been here? The head of Wiener Schnitzel. The one of the coolest was Kelly Marie Tran came in.
Yeah, right.
And nobody knew. And then she like tweeted about it after she left, or Instagrammed about it after she left. So she was in here. Rod Roddenberry is really cool. Ah. Gene Roddenberry's son. And they actually did a big event with us. Kevin Smith, obviously. Greg Grunberg, Matt Lanter.
Well, Kevin does podcasts here all the time.
Yeah, he's here all the time.
The there was one after one of our podcasts, and there was like the Creature Shop was here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the dude who was nominated for an Academy Award for the Creature Shop of Episode 7 was here.
Yeah, Neil Scanlon and all the Paul creators were here just hanging out. And that's why I like the melting potness of it all. It's a good... And like also in Hollywood and in West Hollywood, there's... I don't know, a lot of the bars are a bit serious or full on or something. And it's cool just to come here and, you know, just to be able to hang out and stuff.
I've tried... I find a lot of the bars in West Hollywood are a little... hoity-toity or pretentious, or you kind of have to be the right type of person to go in there. And a lot of the Hollywood bars are just
super tourist
or like how drunk can you get before you get thrown out. And
as someone that's lived here for at least a year, I'm just dead against tourists, you know.
But yeah, it's kind of a neat... We're far enough away from, like, the Hollywood and Highland tourist madness, but I like to try to keep it homey. The music gets a little bit loud on Saturday nights, but, like, I'm the old man who comes in and
Sweet
tries to keep it...
Sweet Caroline.
Yeah. You know what? Every time you've been here have been some of the best nights. You must bring the party, because, like, those are the nights that everybody in the bar sings Sweet Caroline or Bohemian Rhapsody, which happens. It happens in this bar. I've never seen that where, like, Bohemian Rhapsody came on one night, and we had, like, orcs and Jawas and humans and Jedi Knights and like Star-Lords all singing Bohemian Rhapsody together, like as a unit. And you're like, this is something you would see in a sitcom and go, that's really cool, but that would never freaking happen.
It does at times get a bit Holiday Special.
The
Golden Girl doing this, like... Sweet Carolines, I was like, yeah, this is a bit B. Arthur Holiday Special. And I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, what's cool about this place is how uncool it is. You know? Like, nobody has... Like, you don't walk in here and, like, have to put on your cool kid mask. Mm. You literally can come in here and put on your nerdy mask, like, literally and figuratively, and just kind of be yourself. And, like, nobody is going to be like, what is that guy doing here? It's like, oh, no, we're all just nerds.
Now, just to wrap up on the Cantina, you, to your credit, as someone that's, you know, run business and stuff, you're always adding new stuff. Like, there's, like, new signage and new tables and chairs, all that sort of good stuff. What sort of stuff in the future can people brace for?
Well, you know... George Lucas is famously quoted in anonymous filmmaker that said films are never finished, they're only abandoned. We've all heard George Lucas say that a lot. That's kind of how I look at this bar, is there's always something. So our kind of like outer patio area, we're going to redesign to look like the bridge of a starship. And we're going to have TVs that are flush mounted into the controls that typically will just run looping animation, shields charging and command panel readout things. But you'll be able to ask the bartender for a Nintendo controller and play old school video games on those. So he'll say, go sit at Engineering 1 or go sit at Weapons or go sit at Shields or go sit at Communications. And he'll be able to flip that animation over to video games. And you'll be able to play video games here with your friends. And in the spirit of celebrating the things that bring us together instead of the things that separate us. Meaning, I never understood why. I mean, I kind of get like Star Trek versus Star Wars, right? But in today's world where outside of these doors, everything is like, are you a Republican or a Democrat? Are you for this or against this? Are you on this side or that side? Red or blue? Left or right? I want this to be a place where you can love Star Wars and hate Star Trek, and I can love Star Trek and hate Star Wars, but while we're in here, we put that aside and we talk about Firefly and Battlestar Galactica and Lord of the Rings and the 99 things we have in common outside of the one thing that we disagree on.
I'm interested in that because, you know, I'm on Twitter a lot, and for people that are, a lot of podcast listeners are on Twitter a lot, and it's like, oh, the fandom, it's like this and that, but you've got a different, you're in real life, you're IRL Twitter every night. What's like, how much of a different perspective do you have on the way people are interacting?
I would say, no, look, there's definitely people who come in here and they're like, you know, you have a Klingon batleth above your bar, right? Or like Captain America serves drinks here. And they'll be like, Captain America is not in Star Wars. And my bartender's response is, he goes, look, I'm just doing the best I can. I got in a fight with Doctor Strange. The next thing I know, I'm on this swamp planet with this little green elf. He puts me in this silver shiny escape pod. I crash land on this desert planet. I got a job here to save up the money because all I'm trying to do is get home and save my friend Bucky, who's in a lot of trouble. And like, to me, that's how you bring people in. And there's some times that like somebody came in here and we were playing the Ghostbusters theme song. And they look at the bartender and they go, there are no ghosts in Star Wars. And bartender goes, yeah, there are. And he goes,
don't tell Mark
there are
Hamill.
Not ghosts in Star Wars. And he goes, yeah, there are. Like, why are you playing this music? And bartender's like, yeah, there are ghosts in Star Wars. And when you've got a Jedi spirit haunting your house, who you gonna call? And, like, you know, he threw his hands up and he walked out of the bar. And, like, so we do get those. But, you know, that's maybe, like, one out of every 20 people. Mm. You know, most people appreciate inclusion. And most people appreciate the idea that they don't have to be judged for what they like or they don't like or how much they like Star Wars or don't. And, like, if somebody wants to throw down Star Wars trivia with me when I'm here, I'm happy to go deep. But at the same time, like, if they're not that into Star Wars, but they're like, oh, no, I really love Lord of the Rings, you know, Zach will go deep on Lord of the Rings with them and be like, okay, well, if you can answer this question, I'll buy your next drink, you know, and he'll drop some knowledge about, like, the name of the eagle that flew Frodo and Sam home. And, like, I think that's what's so much fun about it is, like, I don't know a lot about Star Trek or Lord of the Rings, but I know a lot about Star Wars and Marvel and Battlestar Galactica. And there's something for everybody here, depending on when you come. But, yes, Twitter definitely slants to the 80% of people are just, like, pick a side. But in real life, I feel like it flips. I feel like most people are like, oh, my God, this is so nice. Yeah. It's not Twitter.
Because, like, you went to The Empire Strikes Back the other week at the Hollywood Bowl. And, like, I went to that and went to John Williams and stuff. And when the Star Wars music's on, like there's thousands of people holding up their lightsabers. There's a thing above all this. No. I think this should happen. This should happen. It's like, it's taking a step back and just like going outside with a group of people and just like, Star Wars is fun, whether it's like at the Hollywood Bowl or it's here. It's so, like, it's such a treat. Like, I'm sure many people that come here couldn't have imagined when they were a teenager that something like this existed. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is,
yeah, well,
this is up there with Disneyland.
When I was a teenager, If I was talking about Star Wars, I like got teased and beat up, and like it was like something that was like whispered in you know, passing like amongst a few select trusted friends. Like,
yeah, right.
You couldn't do it. And now for people who grew up like me, like who have, I mean, look, just that you get the movies we get now, but like to have a place to go is, I mean, that's why I will bleed myself dry to make this place cool and inclusive and keep it safe versus like, you know, most people, because people like us need a place to go, you know, and I'm sure there'll be a million other places that start getting built like this. I know there's another bar in San Jose called Seven Stars that have he's decorated his whole bar with all of his Star Wars toys, and those guys are like the coolest people ever. So like there's a nerd bar, and I know there's a couple in Las Vegas, but like, you know, there's like seven in the country.
I was in France and went, I don't even know how, I found out where there'd be a few nerd stores, and it was just near the chocolate district, so it worked out fine. And just by happenstance, I went down this little lane and found a Star Wars creperie.
The cafe? Yeah.
Odyssey Cafe, it's called. And it's like you're sitting, if they had a creperie on a Star Destroyer, like it's all that wallpaper, and then out the window there's another Star Destroyer. And I was in shock. Unlike here, no one that worked there had any, like, I'm sure the owner did, but the staff on the day could have been more bland about Star Wars. And I'm just like, this is amazing. Why is it here? The owner likes Star Wars. Like, what creep do you want? But it was like an oasis of, my wife's just like, how do these Star Wars things find you? Like, did you know about this? Did you, like,
it's the Force.
Did you mean to go down that lane? I'm like, no, yeah. just happened. Just happened.
You're untrained. You're like Anakin riding his pod racer.
Reaching for the drink. Reaching for the drink. JC, before we wrap up, it's always cool to talk Star Wars with you. Let's talk. We always like to find out what people are looking forward to in Star Wars. And as we sort of touched upon before, The Last Jedi was a rocky road for you, particularly listening to me talk about it. I sort of have this theory that if Episode 9 does what it should do, it should make people appreciate the other 8 episodes more. Like, it should take all, you know, little things and make you go, ooh, I want to, like, that brings up that thing from Attack of the Clones, or, you know, The Force Awakens, or The Empire Strikes Back. And I'm hoping that for those that didn't enjoy The Last Jedi, what happens in Episode 9, sort of they like that so much that it's like, well, that had to happen for that had to happen. But in your mind, like, what's your headcanon of where Episode 9 could wrap up to where it's, like, satisfying for you?
I think if they can, I don't like flashback. I particularly don't like flashback as a storytelling device in Star Wars.
I'm with you. Traditional.
I think if they can find a way to close out Princess Leia's arc with dignity, I think if they can give me, without using flashback, a very good explanation of backstory on how Luke went from Return of the Jedi to the end of Episode 8, and whether that's an Obi-Wan Kenobi type moment where he comes back as a Force ghost and he's like, well, Rey, let me tell you something my mentor told me about a certain point of view. If they can do that, if they can basically tie everything up the way that Return of the Jedi did for what was hanging out with Empire, but do it with and give it a little mythological meat that I think Episode 7 was lacking, but you still have the same joy of and episode 7 felt very weightless, right? Like it was light and fluffy and fun. And episode 8, I think, was like kind of the polar opposite of that.
Mm.
I think if you can kind of find that middle ground where you like anchor everything in mythology, you kind of explain it, but you still make it spirited and adventureful, I think that'll satisfy me. I don't know what they're going to do. At the end of episode 8 felt very much like the end of a story to me. The little boy and his broom. Is episode 9 going to be about the little boy and his broom? I don't know. I think that's a weird way to end a movie if that's not what the next movie's about. Star Wars is all about hope,
yeah,
and I do have hope.
Yeah, that's... I'm glad you learned that lesson from the opening credits of it is, there is this hope for the galaxy and there's hope for the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But when you bring up Broom Boy, sometimes I forget about the Broom Boy. And it is a weird way, because I feel like we think about it the same, like when you say, oh, I don't know about flashbacks, because, you know, you sort of have that Star Wars storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, devices and stuff. And to have that Broom Boy was very, like, I get it in what it represented to Luke Skywalker, like that really, like, as a single end of the film hit me, because I was like, oh my God, mm-hmm. that story of Luke Skywalker is, you know, like I got a lot out of that because like I can sort of relate to his Luke Skywalker
right.
fandom. Anyone that's a fan of Luke Skywalker in the films, like in The Force Awakens, I saw a preview 10 minutes of it like 2 weeks before the film came out. And when Rey says, oh, Luke Skywalker, I thought he was just a myth. And I'm just like, oh my God, Ray's a Luke Skywalker fan like me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anyone that's down for Luke Skywalker, I can appreciate. But it was, yeah, it is jarring in the, like, the rhythm of the films that George Lucas set up.
If that had ended episode 9, I think I would have been like,
yeah.
oh, yes. But at the end of episode 8, I'm like, wait, what? That seems like the end of the book, but I know there's another chapter, you know?
It's, yeah, it's weird because my Star Wars OCD is like, you shouldn't do that. But then I'm like, I love the Broom Boy. I love what he represents.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to unlearn what you have learned.
Yes. And to be fair, like in the prequel movies, I didn't love the fact that they took us inside Anakin's dream. You know,
yeah.
like that kind of rubbed me the same way when I saw it as the flashbacks did. Except I was like, well, it's George Lucas. He can do what he wants. Then the flashback was kind of like the next step further for me, where I was like, ah, you've taken it too far now. Like, yeah, it was a little bit too much.
Yeah, it sort of like niggles with me, but I'm like, am I just being stubborn? I don't, like, yeah. So I'm sort of like, I'm against it, but I'm not sure if I'm right to be against it.
Yeah, yeah. Old gatekeeping, like dogmatic people?
I don't think we're gatekeeping, but we're clinging to the gate as it swings open. JC, thanks so much for your time, and I also thanks for your amazing venue where I can just relax and drink giant glasses of beer. I really appreciate it. Where can the good people of the internet follow your work and the details perhaps of the bar if they want to create some work for you?
At Reifenberg is me. That's probably the best way to get at me. Reifenberg, R-E-I-F-E-N-B-E-R-G on Twitter. I don't really use Instagram because I'm an old man. You can come to the bar and talk to me. That's probably my favorite way of communicating and the best way to get stuff done. Or Scum and Villainy Cantina on Facebook, SV Cantina on Twitter, and Scum and Villainy Cantina on Instagram. All those roads point to me.
So you're not on Instagram that much, but you're happy to come here and be tagged on it.
Yes, yes, yeah. That's... Anything for self-promotion.
including putting up with me for an hour and a half.
Oh, I have fun. I have fun talking to you. Because even when we disagree, I think we have fun with it.
Yeah, well, it's not that big an issue.
Yeah.
Like, we love the films and they've shaped us so much, but at the end of the day, it's sort of just like, You like that color lightsaber? I like that. You know, it's so. And I sometimes I feel like people get a bit too, like, just because someone didn't like that episode of the cartoon, it's they're chill, yeah. Man. It's all chill.
What do you think of Mace Windu's purple lightsaber? Pro or con? Pro or against?
How about this one? No emotion. Let him have it.
Yeah.
Like I sort of. Yeah, I just. I've just gone. I think because I'm on Twitter so much, I'm just past all those. Like I'm just like, I try to generate an opinion, then I go, nah.
You know what we should do?
Spinny lightsabers, though. I can give you an opinion on them. Big thumbs
the
down.
General Grievous ones.
Oh no. The
Oh the others. Yeah. Inquisitor ones were bad. That was bad. And the gun lightsaber of Ezra's, I didn't like
either.
See,
we hit a lot of the same. Yeah. We were brought up to still appreciate our Star Wars in a certain way.
Star Wars Resistance is coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, next week, maybe?
In 2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks? We should, after a couple episodes, you should come back and do another,
yeah,
another
that'd
show
be great
here
fun.
When we got the new stuff coming out.
Yeah, I.
I'll tell you what I'm also excited about. Bob Iger saying maybe one Star Wars movie a year is too much and that Star Wars should be more of an event. Did mm-hmm. you hear that news?
Yeah.
That is so exciting for me because it gives me a chance to dig in deeper before I have to move on to the next piece of Star Wars. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. People talk about like the Marvel movies and all that sort of stuff, but like Star Wars fandom evolved around that 3-year gap mm-hmm. and then a giant gap. And so we get too excited for 3 films a year. Mm-hmm. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like yeah. you can't go to 3 toy launches a year. You can't, right. you can't do all that stuff. So I think like 18 months is the good natural progression of like hype up, hype down, watch the movie, and then gear up for the next film. But one a year, I can handle. I do miss Christmas without Star Wars. I feel like that's going to be, you know.
But I mean, you're still gonna, and I think that's the other thing. Like, it wasn't just a movie a year; it was a movie plus a TV show plus, you know, you had to watch Rebels, and you had to, and it was like I've overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I can't keep up. Like I was used to, and it's probably the same thing for you. Like. You only had 3 Star Wars movies for so long that you just, like, consumed everything Star Wars. Like, if a pencil case came out, you're like, I want that because it's the only thing Star Wars that I'm going to get for the rest of my life.
I've still got that pencil case.
Yeah. Do you know the one I'm talking about? It's blue
with Luke.
Yes! With Luke and Vader on it in the throne room. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's in my cabinet up the road. It's like one of my cherished things,
but like
$2 pencil case.
Yeah, but it that's amazing. You knew exactly what I was talking about. Everybody's gonna think that was staged, which it totally wasn't staged. I bought it at a drugstore in 1989 in Chicago. In the clearance aisle is where I got mine.
Did it come with like a little shaky ruler with the battle
no.
of... So I got it in a set and it came with an R2-D2 sharpener, just with him printed on the sharpener, mm-hmm. and then a lenticula or whatever. You know those rulers that like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like transformers would transform. And so it was the Battle of Endor in space. Ooh. And the Falcon would move around and stuff like that. I think I've got that in the pencil case at home, but I'll look into it and I'll send you a pic. But that pencil case, like I remember just being at school and just staring at it and just like going,
mm-hmm.
"There's Star Wars with me. I love you. I love you." But on a few podcasts, like the bigger ones, DC, they've got like an app and DC Unlimited, and they're saying all the shows that are going to be on it, and I'm like, "Whoa, that's a lot of shows, man. Mm-hmm. That's too much." So yeah, I want to enjoy it as much Star Wars as possible, like a fine wine. Just savor it and let it breathe.
Yeah, and then you like go home, you go to sleep, you wake up hungover, you give it a day, and then you're like, you know what? I could use another glass of wine.
Yeah. And then we can come here and talk about it while we drink beer, which is ironic. Hey, JC, thanks so much for your time, man. And may that force be with you.
Always.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to that super fun episode with the Scum and Villainy Cantina's JC Reifenberg. It's always super fun to be at the Scum and Villainy Cantina, and if you're ever in the LA area, I demand you get down there. And it's also super fun at all times to chat Star Wars with JC. Now, I just want to give an extra shout out to our friends at Harry's Shavers for supporting this episode of Steel Wars. And if you want to check out their free trial shave set offer, you just cover the $3 shipping and you get a travel set, essentially. It is super good and clean shaven. Check it out at harrys.com/Steel Wars. You get a sweet deal and it supports the podcast. And if you want to support the podcast in a direct financial manner, please consider checking out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/Steel Wars. You hold a blurb in the middle of the show, but this month it is extra chock full with really good premium content. And for just $3, you get that as well as the entire back catalog. Of course, there's higher tiers if you want stickers and t-shirts and all that, but $3 certainly gets the job done if you want some extra listening and supporting us. If you want to support us in a non-financial manner, hey man, seriously, just giving us a retweet or share on Facebook or Instagram or wherever really does help us. And of course, writing a sweet 5-star review on iTunes bumps up the rankings and vouchers to potential listeners that we're doing some good stuff. And it also bumps down the silly reviews from people that, I don't know, I liked a movie too much and they're angry about that. Anyway, so yeah, jump on iTunes and write a proper review from an actual listener. It really does help out. And it also helps my enthusiasm, which with a 6-week-old child is tentative at best. So anything you can do to help us out is super, super appreciated. And on the Cantina theme, you should go check out our live episodes that we've done there. We did one with Sam Witwer, Darth Maul in Rebels and Solo and all over the place. Starkiller in The Force Unleashed. That was a ripping episode. We also did The Last Jedi, the 1 month reaction. We did a Rebels reaction. They're all available in video and audio. And we also did a Solo reaction show. And great times at the Scum and Villainy Cantina. And all those shows resulted in very late nights with perhaps a bit of Sweet Caroline getting sung at some point. Love that place. I love it so much. And we've been doing pretty well with our Friday schedule for the Hyper News, breaking down all the Star Wars news for the week. And you can watch that live or on demand at youtube.com/Steel Wars. If you're in America, it's Friday evenings. If you're in Australia, it is Saturday mornings. It's changed a little bit because of daylight savings has changed in everyone's country, so all the times get mixed around. But you can check the website for the exact time in your country. And of course, the audio version of that is an exclusive for our Patreons. Just from the $1 tier, get that. So enjoy. We had Emily Lind on last episode going through all the Mando news, and this week there'll be more Mando news. It is the best of times. And of course, we take listener calls, so you can be on the podcast too. Thanks so much for all your support. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much to JC, and may that force be with you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
If you're after more Star Wars listening, please check out the Making Star Wars Podcast Network at makingstarwars.net, where you can find such great podcasts as Blue Harvest, First Order Transmissions, Idiots Array, Making Star Wars Now This Is Podcasting, Podcast 2187, Rebel Girl, Rogue One, Tarkin's Top Shelf, the Cargo Hold, and the Sith List. So that's planetbroadcasting.com and makingstarwars.net. Los Angeles tickets are now on sale for our final live podcast of the year at Geeky Tees Magnolia Boulevard, Burbank on Saturday, December 15th at 4 p.m. For the first time ever, we'll be doing a live podcast version of our annual Listener Prediction Review Show, where we review all the Star Wars news predictions that you guys made at the start of the year. I'll be joined on stage by a grip of previous Steel Wars guests, along with the live audience, to help us decide who was the Jedi Master Star Wars predictor for 2018. And spoiler alert, I did not fare well in this competition. It's going to be a hilarious afternoon of live Star Wars fun, Saturday, December 15th, 4 p.m. at Geeky Tees Burbank. Tickets are on sale at merchostore.com. The link is in the show notes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.